you're here. Fellowship's sweeter, knowing you're near. It's so good to see you, I hope that it's fair. Everyone loves you, we're glad you're here.
Reading from Mark chapter 6, verses 34 through 37a. When Jesus saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them, so he began teaching them. By this time it was late in the day, so the disciples came and said, "This is a remote place. Send the people away so that they can go and buy something to eat." But Jesus answered, "You give them something to eat." They said, "That would take 8 months of a man's wages." Mark chapter 6, verses 34 through 37a. Oh, magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It is Tuesday, May 6, 2025. We're continuing in our series, What Happens When You Have Faith, Part 1, which began last Tuesday and Wednesday and will conclude today, Daring Faith, the Key to Miracles. Now, we've looked at faith is seen from God's point of view, and we learned what happens when we see with eyes of fear. One, we exaggerate our difficulties. Two, we underestimate our abilities. Three, we get discouraged. Four, we start to gripe about our lives. And five, we eventually give up and blame God. But then last Wednesday we learned, what happens when we see with eyes of faith? And here's 6 points. 1, faith shrinks our problems. 2, faith opens the doors for a miracle. 3, faith moves God to act on our behalf. 4, faith unlocks all the promises of God. 5, faith turns God-given dreams into reality. And 6, faith gives us power to hold on in tough times. Now, if you missed those programs last week, they are archived at greatnewsradio.org and wluj.org under the Mark and Friends tab. Well, today we're going to learn to expect to see miracles, to grow spiritually, to at times be hassled by Satan, but to experience joy. With today's message by Rick Warren covering that we need to admit we have an unsolved problem, 2, that we need to learn to give God what little we have, 3, that we need to put it all into the hands of Jesus, and 4, that we need to expect for God to multiply it. Buckle up and get ready for a blessing as we learn what happens when we have faith, with a concluding message to part 1, Daring Faith, the Key to Miracles. Here's Pastor Rick Warren of Saddleback Church.
And we're going to look at the most famous miracle of Jesus Christ. It's the Jesus feeding the 5,000. How he took one little boy's lunch and was able to feed the 5,000. And really, this story is all about how God turns a little into a lot. You need to know these principles, because many times for the rest of your life, you're going to need God to turn a little into a lot in your life. You got a little energy, you need a lot of energy. You got a little bit of talent, you need God to turn it into a lot of talent. You got a little opportunity, you need God to turn it into a big opportunity. You got a little connections, relationships, you need God to turn it into some big relationships, some big connections. You got a little bit of money, you need God to turn it into a lot of money. Many times in your life, God is going to need to turn a little into a lot. I got a little bit of help, but I really need great help. How does God turn a little into a lot? That's what this story and that's what this miracle is all about. Now, Jesus never did miracles just to show off. Like, hey, look at this miracle. I learned this one at the Magic Castle. It's really cool. You can impress your friends with it. And so use it at your next cocktail party. Do this little miracle. Jesus never did a miracle to show off. Every miracle is to teach a spiritual truth. And the spiritual truth of Jesus of the feeding of the 5,000 is to show us how to prepare for a miracle where God turns a little into a lot in your life. Very important as we start Daring Faith. Now, this miracle is so important, It's the only miracle of Jesus told four times in the New Testament. It's in the book of Matthew, it's in the book of Mark, it's in the book of Luke, and it's in the book of John. All four authors were so impressed with this miracle, and you couldn't deny it. I mean, there were 5,000 people who saw it, that it makes all four. Now, anytime God tells you something four times, he's saying, you really should pay attention to this one. You should really pay attention to this one. Now, here's the story. Jesus goes out into the Judean desert, and he's out there and he's teaching, and about 5,000 people follow him out into the Judean desert. And he's teaching all day, and at the end of the day, 5,000 people are hungry, and they're 25 miles from the nearest McDonald's. Or actually, in Israel, it'd be McDavid's. And there's no fast food nearby, and everybody's hungry. And the disciples come to Jesus and go, hey, Lord, it's late in the day, and everybody's hungry. And Jesus says, you feed them. I love this line. We'll get to it in a minute. You feed them. They go, Lord, that's impossible. It's physically, practically, humanly impossible for us 12 to feed these guys. What is going on here? Jesus is performing a miracle to teach us the four keys to getting ready for a miracle. Write these down. Here's the first step. Step number one to a miracle in your life is admit, I have an unsolvable problem. I must admit that I have an unsolvable problem. Now, let me be real blunt. If you don't have an unsolvable problem, you don't need a miracle. That's kind of obvious, right? If it's not unsolvable, you don't need a miracle. If you have a solvable problem, solve it. Just solve it. I mean, people come to me, Rick, I've really gotten overweight. I need a miracle. Stop eating. It's not like a miracle. You don't need a miracle. You need a diet. Right? And a lot of times we want miracles when God says, no, you're just overspending. The reason you're in so much debt is you're overspending. You need a plan. You don't need a miracle. You need a spending plan. But the first step is to admit, I have an unsolvable problem. Now, in Mark chapter 6, here's the story. When Jesus saw the large crowd, he had compassion on them. So he began teaching them. By this time, it was late in the day. So his disciples came and said, this is a remote place. Send the people away so they can go and buy something to eat. But Jesus answered, you give them something to eat. And they said, Lord, that would take 8 months of a man's wages. And notice they go all economics on Jesus here. Now, in that verse, in that passage I just read, we have the three typical responses when we have an unsolvable problem in our life. You do this, everybody does this. I do it. We procrastinate, we pass the buck, and we worry. All three of those things are in that passage right there. First, we procrastinate. When we have a problem we can't solve, we just keep putting it off. We know we need to solve it, but we don't know how to solve it, so we just keep putting it off. We delay, we pretend it doesn't exist, we look the other way. The phrase in this passage says, by this time it was late in the day. They were procrastinating. They had all day to figure out food service for 5,000 people. Let's call up Domino's or something. They had all day to figure it out, but they had done nothing. Now, procrastination only makes a problem worse in your life. If you got cancer, you deal with it now. Not tomorrow, not next week. You deal with it now. Procrastination has never solved any problem. It only makes it worse. I wonder what problem you have been procrastinating over. I wonder what problem you know is there and you're pretending isn't a problem. What problem are you pretending isn't in your marriage? What problem are you pretending isn't in your body? What problem are you pretending isn't in your finances? We procrastinate. And then we pass the buck. And what we do is we blame other people. We say, well, it's not really my problem. It's her problem. It's their fault. And we blame others. And you've heard me say many times, you spell blame, be lame. Every time you blame, you are being lame. And so the disciples say, send the people away. What are they doing? They're passing off responsibility. They say, hey, we didn't invite these guys out here. We didn't ask them to come eat. We didn't ask them, we didn't promise them food. We didn't even invite them to come here, Jesus teach. I said, just send them away, out of sight, out of mind. We didn't ask them to come. Let them find their own food. We pass the buck on our problem. And the third thing we do is we worry. And we fret and we stew and we get anxious and we get stressed out. And we say, Lord, it would take 8 months' wages to pay for these guys. And the disciples' anxiety goes into overdrive. And, you know, I can just imagine Peter doing this cost analysis. Imagine the expense. 5,000 people. You know, how are we ever going to import the food? How are we going to keep it hot? How are we going to distribute it? How are we going to do the cleanup? Who's going to get the health permits? What about liability insurance? And their minds are just going in overdrive, and we worry, worry, worry. And notice, I love what Jesus says. He looks at these 12 guys, and he says, you feed them. You feed them. And they go, what? Me? Peter's going, are you kidding, Lord? He says, we can't do that. Now, here's the point. They're procrastinating, they're passing the buck, and they're worrying. What's the problem with this picture? They're standing next to Jesus, the guy who could easily turn stones to bread if he wanted to, who could easily feed everybody instantly if he wanted to. They're standing in the presence of the Son of God, and they're going, what's going on here? And Jesus says, you feed them. And they say, Lord, that's practically, financially, and humanly impossible. Question, has God ever asked you to do something impossible? He loves to do that. God loves to ask you to do something possible, impossible. And you go, Lord, I don't have the time. I don't have the money. I don't have the energy. I don't have the education. You got the wrong guy, Lord. Moses, I want you to do this. Not me. Yeah. You know? Jeremiah, why me? You know? You gotta say like Isaiah, use me, here am I, send me. And God says, I want you to do the impossible. Why does he ask that? Why does God ask you to do the impossible? He wants to stretch your faith. Every time. When God asks you to do something you think is physically and financially impossible, he wants to stretch your faith. And this is the first principle of a miracle. I have to admit that the problem I'm facing right now is unsolvable. Okay? Principle number two. Here's the second step to a miracle. Give God what little I already have. I give God what little I already have. And now Jesus says to the disciples, I want you to do a little reconnaissance. Go out and see if anybody's got any lunches. He says, how many loaves do you have? Jesus asked. Go and see. He sends them out on a little reconnaissance to 5,000 people. And when they found out, they said, 5 small loaves of bread and 2 fish. One little boy has a sack lunch. Now wait a minute. Out of 5,000 people, only one guy brought a lunch. I'm thinking a lot of rich people are hiding the picnic basket under their robe because they don't want to share it with anybody else. In 5,000 people, it is highly doubtful to me that only one boy brought a lunch. His mom has packed him, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 little barley rolls and a couple of, you know, dried fish, okay? He's the only one. But he becomes the hero of the story because he's willing to offer up what he's got. And he gives God what little he had. Now, why did Jesus do this? Why did Jesus say, find out how many lunches are out there. Find out how many loaves of bread are among this crowd. He didn't need anything to do a miracle. He just go, bread for everybody, manna falls. There are a million different ways you could have done it. Why did he do this? The second principle of a miracle is this. God always starts with what I have. God always starts with what I have. It may not be much, but I give it to God. I say, God, I don't have much time, but here's my time. God, my finances aren't much, but here's what I've got. God, my talent isn't much, but here's my talent. God, my sex life isn't much, but there's a little nervous laughter on that one. Okay. But I give you everything in my life. I give you my reputation. I give you my heart, my soul, my past, my present, my future. It isn't much, but I'm going to give you my 5 loaves and 2 fish. Now, it's interesting that when you, God always starts with what I have. John chapter 6, verse 6 tells us a little detail of this story. It said, Jesus asked this, how many loaves do we have out there? Only to test them. For he already had in mind what he was going to do. He wasn't sweating it. When God asks you to do the impossible, he's not sweating it. He already has in mind what he knows to do. He'd seen the need long before they did, and he had a plan. Now, I want you to write this down. This is important truth. God always has the answer before I even know the problem. In your life, God always knows the answer before you even know what the problem is. He saw the problem long. It's not late in the day for Jesus. He saw it long before. He knew it was coming. He already has a plan for it. God already knows the solution to your problem before you even recognize it's a problem. So why are you worrying? That's one of the principles of a miracle. I admit I have an unsolvable problem, and then I give God what little I have. Number three, the third thing I do is I put it all in the hands of Jesus. I put it all in the hands of Jesus. And in John's account of this miracle, it tells us this little detail, that the disciple Andrew finds this one little boy who'd brought a sack lunch. And his mom had packed him, it wasn't much, had packed him, you know, five little barley loaves or muffins and maybe a couple sardines or something, I don't know, but he's got fish and little loaves of bread. It's not much. Now, I imagine that a lot of other people probably bought bigger lunches, but this boy becomes the hero because he gives God whatever he's got. It isn't much, but he says, I'm giving it to you. And the Bible says in verse 41, Jesus took the five loaves and the two fish, and he blessed the food, and he broke the loaves, and as he kept breaking them, he kept giving them to the disciples to set before the people. And here's the third principle. God will use whatever I give him. God will use whatever I give him. It may not be much, but if I give him what little time, energy, effort, whatever I've got, I give it to God, he will use it. Now, I don't have time to get into this, but we could do a detailed study looking at the other verses of how this little boy gave. He gave willingly, cheerfully, and immediately, which are the keys to a miracle. He gives willingly. Matthew tells us that he volunteered. Let me ask you this. Would you share your lunch? You're in 5,000 people, crowd of 5,000. Everybody's hungry, and you're the only one who's going to say, hey, I got something to eat. Would you do that? Took a great faith. He did it willingly, did it cheerfully, didn't grumble, he didn't complain, didn't worry, and he did it immediately. And as soon as he saw there was need, he said, Jesus, take my lunch. And he gives his lunch, no hesitation. Now, because of that, we come to the fourth key to a miracle. Write this down. Expect God to multiply it. I give God whatever I have, I put it in the hands of Jesus, and then I expect God to multiply it. Now notice what happens. In Mark chapter 6, verse 42 and 44, it says, everybody ate, that's all 5,000. They all had enough. And it said, afterwards, they collected 12 basketfuls of leftovers. I love this. They're going home with doggy bags. Jesus doesn't even just satisfy everybody. He makes a spiritual lesson. Obviously, the 12 is a symbol of the 12 tribes and his fulfillment. But he said, the 12 basketful, and they're going home. Now, I love this. Imagine this kid goes home, and he walks home, walks in with 12 baskets full of loaves and fishes. And his mom says, Jacob, where'd you get all that food? He goes, Mom, I gave my lunch to Jesus, and he multiplied it. Go to your room. And you stay there until your father gets home. And you stay there till you're ready to tell me the truth. Really, Mom? I gave Jesus my lunch and he multiplied it. You just stay there. Wait till your father gets home. I mean, would you believe that story? I mean, it's mind-boggling. That's why they call it a miracle. Now, here's the fourth principle. You might write it down. Whatever I give, I always get back more. Whatever I give out, I always get back more. This little boy's lunch not only blessed 5,000 other people, but he ends up being richer himself. I could give you a lot of testimonies on that one. How God blesses you as you try to bless others, that you cannot outgive God. And he ends up with more than he started with. Now, here's the point, the big lesson. God likes to do miracles through people, not independently. He likes to work through the ordinariness of people. And what we wait for God to do for us, God is waiting to do through us. God wants to turn you into a miracle machine. He doesn't want to just do a miracle for you. He wants to do a miracle through you, like he did through this little boy who gave him, wasn't much, but it was all he got, all he had, and he gives it to Jesus, and God takes it, breaks it, blesses it, and multiplies it.
Wow, God, I think of one of my favorite lines. Woo-hoo! You cannot outgive God, and the fact that God likes to do miracles through ordinary people, through you and through me. You've been hearing a message by Pastor Rick Warren of Saddleback Church. As last week we began a new series, What Happens When You Have Faith, in part one, which was last Tuesday and Wednesday and concluded today, Daring Faith, the Key to Miracles. How having faith in Jesus turns a lot into a little? Here are four things to remember and that were covered today. One, admit that you have an unsolved problem. Two, give what little you have to God. Three, put it all into the hands of Jesus. And four, expect God to multiply it. He's the one to get the glory, the honor, the praise, the worship. We're just vehicles or conduits of his many blessings. But he does, in fact, like to do miracles through ordinary people. If you missed a portion of today's broadcast or want to listen to it again or send it on to a friend, stop by greatnewsradio.org or wluj.org. Click on the Mark and Friends tab and listen anytime. Now, next Tuesday and Wednesday, we'll be looking at part two, The Key to Miracles, and we'll look at the importance of growing, sowing, and growing in faith, finding four purposes to advance our spiritual maturity by stretching our faith, two, to enhance our relational unity by cooperating together, three, to finance the global ministry through an offering and pledge, and four, to honor everyday heroes of faith that serve in your church family. That'll be next Tuesday and Wednesday's edition of Mark and Friends. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Media. God bless you and have a great day and night.